Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and on to the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, we are once again coming to you from the Upward Sports Studio. I am your running host, Dean Thompson. Last week, you know, we talked about taking a leap of faith. Well, let's say you did that and you accomplished this big goal. Well, now what? Sometimes it feels like a letdown, huh? Well, we're going to discuss that today. And then I'm going to talk about my absolute favorite runner of all time. You think you might know who it is after listening to this podcast for a while? Well, don't bet on it. It might surprise you. And joining me for those stories and much more is Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
We had a good weekend, didn't we?
We did. It was a we talked about it in our meeting yesterday morning. You know, leading into race weekend, it's just busy and it's hectic. And there's a lot of work goes into one of those things. Most people don't understand. They think you just show up and run. But there's a lot of work goes into it. And, you know, on Friday, you're thinking, why are we even doing this? Yeah. And then Saturday night after it's all over and we're at the banquet for the Run Club members and you start to hear the stories.
And you know.
Man, it's just incredible. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good
yeah,
stuff.
I mean, it is.
Lots of great stories. And we talk about it on Thursday night. And so we'll it's all good. This podcast today is going to be a little different. Mm-hmm. Than our normal podcast. It's mm-hmm. going to hit things from a little different angle than you're used to. So stay tuned for that. I think it should be interesting.
Sure.
For sure. We had a post from last week from Michelle Mitcheff. She says, praising Jesus for the blessing of fellowship. In the run at about half a mile, I told Rebecca to go ahead. I was favoring my knee, really my hip, after that fall about a month ago. So I needed to slow down. But God, I met Mark, who is 60 plus, and said he is just starting to run again. We ran the whole race together until mile 5. Then I told him I was going to finish strong. We actually had a much better pace than my goal of 14:30 per mile. It was a true joy to meet him and his wife and to fellowship, and he invited us to come visit anytime. His daughter lives right by us. Anyhow, little did I know, my time was sub 13 minutes per mile and close to setting a 10K PR. That was not the plan. But I loved how when we seek first His kingdom, then all these things are added to us. I've never placed in a race, and I praised God that we all did. Rebecca, Mark, and me, we are running this race together. What a sweet picture. Loved Steve and the kiddos who supported us along the way and sweet Rebecca who ran back and ran me into the finish line. They are the best.
You know, the thing that sticks out to me about this post is kind of what we talked about last week. I mentioned that I went on a walk with a buddy of mine and we blinked and it was 7 miles in.
Yeah.
It goes to show you when you take your mind off of the grind many times, you surprise yourself.
Yeah.
Which tells me that it's not in your legs.
That's
it's
right.
Not that you can't. I mean, she wound up running, it sounds like a pretty big PR, and didn't even realize it because she had somebody with her. They were probably getting to know each other, and time just flew by. And so there's a lot of lessons that we don't talk about in that post, that a lot of times it's not the ability, it's not the fitness, it's where's your mind?
It is. And here's the thing is that if you're able to run a PR by taking your mind completely off of something, then that means you
and said, talking to somebody.
Yes.
Whole time.
Yeah. The problem is in your mind. And the truth is that you can do even better, but you got to learn how. Here's my thing is I think that the difference between, for most people, the difference between why they do better when they're distracted versus when they're focused on what they're doing, mm-hmm. it's all in relaxation.
Sure.
It's all in just being comfortable with being uncomfortable mm-hmm. and focusing on that and focusing on staying relaxed through that uncomfortable feeling. And you'd be amazed at what you can do. But instead, you know, we focus on the pain and how bad it hurts and how much you want to stop or slow down. And that doesn't help.
Well, we talked about 2 weeks ago, you and I were just talking about, I mentioned Landon, my son, and how he would disagree with this, but he has this block of, there's a few guys in front of him in our region that I don't think he has the confidence that he could go after them. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on this podcast 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, Monday night was the region track meet, and he went with those two guys. And it was a three-man race for the entire mile. They were back and forth. Landon was actually in the lead. I thought he was going to win it with 50 yards to go.
Wow.
He was in the front, and he got done. I mean, he won third in the region. Huge PR.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned something to him, and he's like, Landon's like, oh, it wasn't a lack of confidence. I'm like, then what was it? You know, and it was absolutely, you know, he did it. He didn't have time to think because he had guys. I mean, it was a real race. It's what we like to see at track meets.
Yeah.
But it's what he did is no different than what Michelle did right here.
That's right.
It's no different. It's you're putting your mind somewhere else and allowing your body to reach its full potential.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, the other thing about this post, too, is she talks about how she backed off because her injury was starting to flare up. That's a smart thing to do.
Sure.
And I think that there are times, and this is obviously one of them, where you can push through an injury. Sometimes it's okay to do that, and sometimes it's not. The thing, I think there's two things about having an injury. And one of them is the relaxation I was talking about a little while ago. A lot of times when we are injured and we have a problem, we don't relax because we're so focused on tensing up that area because it hurts. And I get it. I totally get it. But if we can learn how to relax, a lot of times we can run through some of those things. And then the other thing about why you got to be careful running through injuries is your range of motion changes. The faster you run, the bigger your range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that makes it worse by that bigger range of motion. So you just got to be careful. But obviously, in this case, it worked out pretty well. So it was pretty cool. Trivia question from last week. This one was a little different. There have been numerous movies about running, but most of them do not have big stars in them. And if they do, the star is usually not the center of the movie. There was a movie made in 1979 that, as far as I know, had the biggest star as the center of the movie about running. What was the name of that movie, and who was that star? Had you ever heard of this movie?
I haven't, no.
There's a movie called Running. Just simply
title.
Running. Yeah. It came out in 1979, and it starred Michael Douglas. I mean, names don't get a whole lot bigger than Michael Douglas. And he was the star of it.
Of course, a lot of our young people listening may not have
They may
ever
not
heard
know who Michael Douglas is. Yeah. 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 If you say Gordon Gekko, they might, you know, even young people, you don't know who Gordon Gekko is? You never saw Wall Street, the movie Wall Street?
No.
Oh, my goodness. You got to see that. Great Michael Douglas movie. There was another movie in the 80s that had a big star in it too, but his star kind of faded. Michael Douglas actually got bigger after this. The Robbie Benson was in a movie called, what was it called? Running Brave. And it was the story of Billy Mills. Great story.
Yeah.
But Robbie Benson was in that. And Robbie Benson back in the 80s was huge. He kind of faded somehow. I'm not sure why. But that was another good movie too about Billy Mills. That's a great story too. But Michael Douglas in this movie, he was not a runner before this movie. And so when he found out he was going to be in the movie, he started running 20 minutes a day. And then he worked up from there to running 50 to 60 miles a day, according to some stuff that I found.
A day?
Not a day. I'm sorry. 50 to 60 miles a week.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's a lot of running. That's a lot
it
of running
is,
for
yeah.
somebody who hasn't
sure.
run before.
Yeah.
And there's actually one shot in the movie where he's running across the bridge there in New York, where because of all the takes he had to take, he ran 15 miles that day.
Wow,
that's a lot of running in a movie.
Yeah.
I think it's admirable because it would have been easy for them to have taken this movie and put in stuntmen and just showed the angle,
body
a little
doubles,
different angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't. And this guy, you know, Michael Douglas, kudos to him for doing that.
Sure.
Anyway, it's a great story. And it's a story of this guy. The character's name is Michael Andropoulos. How cool is that for a running name? It just sounds like a good running name, doesn't it? It's Greek, obviously. Yeah. And his whole life is falling apart. He's working in this not a great job. He's lost his main source of income. But he still runs, and he loves to run, and he's obviously very good at it. And he wants to qualify for the Olympics and the Olympic trials. And it's this story. And his marriage is falling apart. His wife is divorcing him. She's left him. It's just this sad thing where this guy is just – he's just one step. He's got great big plans, but he doesn't follow through on them. And it's that story of all of that stuff coming together. Sure. And at one point in time, he goes and he runs the Olympic trials. And just through fortune, good fortune, he winds up making it as one of the top three to go to the Olympics. And he goes to the Olympics. And what happens there, I don't want to talk about because you need to see the movie. And it's a really, really cool story. Mm-hmm. And not what you're thinking. It's really completely different than what you're thinking. Anything you can't be thinking what actually happens in the movie. It's that unexpected. But a good movie. Great movie. So
I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah, go check out Running. Now, IMDb only gives it a 5.9 rating, but I think it's far better than that. I really do. And if you're not a running fan, you may not think as much of it. Maybe that's why the rating is so low. But it's a good story, and it's a lot of running movies I've seen are not well done because the people are clearly not runners. And in this case, especially the fact that it was made in 79, it's pretty well done.
I have to go check that out.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, Dean, so we're back, and this is the point in the podcast every week where we talk about submitting your story. Last week, I was talking about... What was I talking about last week?
The motorcycle.
The motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
So I got another story to tell.
Cool.
That is just another reason of why everybody listening needs to submit their story. So I went to get my oil changed yesterday at the oil well here in Dalton, and I walked in, I was sitting there, and this other gentleman walks in, so there's three people in there. There's the lady behind the counter. There's me and this gentleman that walked in. Well, he had a badge on, like a not like a officer badge, but a badge. Obviously, he obviously worked for the county, Whitfield County. And so you know me, I don't meet a stranger. So I said, "Hey, you know what part of the county you work with?" Because I know a lot of people at the county. And he said, "I work in drug court." And I said, "Really?" I said, "I've heard of that before." I said, "Tell me a little bit about what that is." And he started telling me that it's a program that we have in Whitfield County where instead of sending people to jail, that they put them into rehab facilities. And he mentioned the Carter Hope Center. He said, Carter Hope Center is one of them. And I said, "Well, I'm very familiar with the Carter Hope Center." And for those of you listening, the Carter Hope Center is a recovery program for addicts and alcoholics, and it's a 1-year program. And my father's actually went through that program before he died. He had a decades long problem with alcohol. And so I started telling this gentleman dad's story. My story and my dad's story, which I'll look it up before we get off here and we can put it in the notes. But if you want to hear my dad's testimony told through my eyes, And what I'm talking about here, you can go back and listen to it. We've done it on the podcast. But anyway, I was telling this guy the story of my dad and, you know, our estranged relationship, how we didn't talk to each other for years. And then the whole God story about how God brought us back together through Run for God of all things, and how I was able to walk my dad lead him into a relationship with Jesus Christ through Run for God, and just the reconciliation. And I'm kind of looking around, and I look at this guy, and he's crying.
Mm.
And I mean, I was like, okay, this just got really awkward. You know, because I don't know what's going on. And he said, yeah, I work in drug court. He said, I see these stories every day about what you're talking about. He said, but I haven't seen my daughter in years. He said, I don't even know if she's alive. And he said something to the effect, us meeting is no coincidence.
Wow.
And so I texted him the episode that where I gave my dad eulogy.
It's episode 44, by the way.
Episode 44. Yep. I said, you need to listen to this. And I've sent that episode to many people through the years because, you know, if you have these type of relationships or you know somebody that's dealing with alcohol or drug abuse, you got to listen to it.
Mm.
And so I sent it to him. And I'm not going to give his name or his daughter's name, but I said, I'm going to commit to praying for you and your daughter. Because you could just see the weight and the gravity that he helps people every day. And yeah. He's in the same situation of the people that he's helping. So pray for this gentleman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just another reason why because I used to be ashamed of that part of my story.
Yeah.
With my dad. And that's where the devil wants us to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Because God can use your story, no matter how colorful or bad or mundane that you think it is. People need to hear your story. My dad has been dead for years now, and his story is still speaking to people.
Yeah.
All over the place. And that's what God can do. That's what God can do with our testimonies, no matter how bad it is or how vanilla it is.
Yeah.
God can use it. So yeah,
that's why we need to hear it.
Submit your story.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, I know the guy, the Superior Court judge who is in charge of that program.
Mm-hmm.
If people could hear his heart outside of that courtroom, oh my gosh.
What is his name?
Jim Wilbanks.
Okay, yeah. That's who I was thinking. He mentioned the judge a few times yesterday, and I didn't ask him the name, but I was thinking that's who it was.
That man cares so deeply for those people. Mm-hmm. That if people only knew. I mean, I'm sure it shows in a lot of ways, but I mean, really, I mean, that's the highlight of everything he does.
Yeah.
Is that drug court and the success stories that come out of it.
So. Yeah. Well, this gentleman's daughter, 23 years old, hadn't seen her in 3 years, I think he said, doesn't know if she's dead or alive. Last he heard, she was in California. So pray for that situation.
Well, I hope that turns out well. All right. Well, you know, I was watching Armand Duplantis, also known as Mondo Duplantis, set another world record in the pole vault this week. And I think it's interesting that what he does is he'll set the pole vault like a centimeter at a time. Like he'll
can constantly keep
so he can keep breaking it,
yeah.
Which he probably has some kind of clause in his contract or something that pays him when he breaks a world record or something like that. But do you think that's okay? I mean, if the guy can jump higher, don't you want to see how high he can go? And what happens if his fitness gets, you know, everything passes him by and he never gets to really jump as high as he can jump? And you got to wonder, has he jumped higher in practice? You know, like the world record is 20 feet, 6 inches. Has he jumped 20 feet, 10 inches in practice? Because, you know, you kind of get the feeling that maybe he has. And I'm sure he would never talk about it because then people would think he's sandbagging or something. But
yeah,
I don't know. Isn't that kind of an interesting thought?
It's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to throw mud at the guy when he's breaking the world record.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not throwing mud.
No, yeah.
It's kind of an interesting.
But I can see people out there taking it to that extreme.
For sure, yeah.
You know how the haters online are.
But, of course, he's only the second guy. Sergey Bubka was the guy who was, when I was younger, he broke the world record 18 times.
Really?
18 times. I think the world record went from like 19.2 to like 20 feet, 2.5 inches. And he just broke it all so many times.
Yeah, I mean,
times.
If they have a clause in their contract that says you get a $20,000 bonus if you break the world record, absolutely. I'm going up a centimeter at a time.
I would, too.
It's funny. We were just talking about, I was trying to think about what the world record was in pole vault this past Monday, because there was a young lady, you know, in a high school pole vault, especially around here. I mean, it's just, it's really a joke. I mean.
Yeah.
But there was a girl that she was pole vaulting 12 feet.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
I mean, To watch a normal high school meet and then to see her pop up, I mean,
yeah.
To look at it, you're like, she just did 20 feet.
Yeah.
That's how far above everybody else she was.
Yeah.
But 12 feet is pretty good for a high school grade. And she didn't seem to be a senior. She looked young.
Wow.
Really young. So
that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, this week's story is a very serious story. Again, what happens when you have a big goal and then you reach it? Well, what do you do now? Mm. This one comes from Pam Bishop, and it's called The Blues. I started my couch to marathon journey in January 2023. Each leg of the journey called for longer training runs, more intentional recovery time, better nutrition, and a lot of time away from my responsibilities and the people that I love. In February 2024, I ran the Run for God Couch to Marathon graduation race in Mississippi. Even with all the sacrifices that I made, I would not have changed any of it. I learned so much about myself, and I learned that I can trust God in all circumstances. I have been changed by this experience. But since then, I find myself feeling listless, easily frustrated, and generally blue. I haven't committed to a new training plan. I haven't really been engaging in the Run for God community. I am studying God's Word, but maybe not spending enough time listening to what God is saying. This is not where I thought I would be more than 2 months after achieving such an epic goal. Turns out, there's a term for this, post-race blues. Neurologists have a chemical explanation for it. Coaches and athletes tell their firsthand experiences with it. Basically, the drive, focus, training, sacrifice, and excitement of training for a marathon peaks with the elation of crossing that finish line. But a couple of days later, I started to notice a void in my life. Recovery created a large vacancy in my daily routines that was once filled with running, recovering from running, or just thinking about running. But now what? Who am I without the couch to marathon plan? The simple answer was to pick up another race or pick another training plan and start running again. But the blues robbed me of my motivation and my energy. I find myself feeling sad more days than not. I feel lost, trying to decide what to do next. When I first noticed the feeling this way, I assumed it was a mood that I would eventually go away. But then, life got busy with sick kids and school schedules. I ignored this thing that had become a thorn in my side. When other people started to comment on my ambivalence and pessimism, I realized this might be something more than just post-race blues. It was now something I had to do something about. My first step was to have a conversation. I admitted to God, my husband, and some trusted friends that I'm feeling blue. Putting words to paper in this story has also helped me understand what has been going on and my need to take action. I don't have a happy ending to share yet, but I can honestly say that I trust God to walk with me through the blue days until He shows me the way out. Joy is not the antithesis of sadness. Joy is the evidence of allowing God to work in my life, and I can joyfully say that God is at work. God is building something new on the foundation of trust that He poured into my life during the marathon training process. God is not finished with me yet. So, stay tuned for the rest of the story.
Just a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the story.
Sure.
Because here's the thing. What you notice about this story is she hasn't given up, right? You know,
sure.
She's still focused on doing what God has for her. And that's a good thing. At the same time, this is a real story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real thing that happens to people when you work your tail off for something for a long period of time and then you accomplish that thing. The what's next is a real issue for some people.
Yeah, and we're definitely not going to sit here and start prescribing things to Pam.
right,
or where she's at. But this is something we have seen, and I have dealt with. I'm sure that you've dealt
with. Absolutely. All runners have.
And it really comes down to, I'm assuming this is the same story we were talking about in our meeting on Monday. Mm-hmm. We brought this up. Yeah. And a lot of times this can come down to identity.
Yeah.
We are runners. We spend countless hours doing this. And, you know, I became the runner guy in my church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now I'm known as the Run for God guy in my church, even though I don't do a whole lot of running now. We have to be careful. And I'm not saying this is where Pam is, but I've got a hunch that our identity becomes the thing that we're doing and not who we are.
Yeah.
And it's easy to let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be on guard because our identity is a child of God.
Yeah.
That we have to always start with that. Anytime anything comes in front of that,
yeah,
you start walking the line of idolatry.
Right.
That's where this ministry started.
Right.
Was I doing something horrible? No, I was running. It can't be bad. It can be. And so, at least for me, the blues that I had back then was that I was in church. I was doing all the church things, but my identity wasn't in Christ.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's where Pam's at. But that's where I was, and I think that's where a lot of people can get. And this happens to people who aren't even Christian. It's still the same thing.
Yeah.
Their identity becomes this thing.
And we're fortunate.
Or it may be a hunter, it may be a fisherman. I mean, people do this same thing when hunting season's over. Mm-hmm. You lost your identity, and that's the problem, is that becomes your identity.
And as Christians, we're fortunate that we know the real identity,
sure,
right? So we're fortunate.
And Pam's seeing that. She knows that.
That's right.
She's putting that together.
Right. Yep. Yeah. This is it's good. I see this a lot in running in general. I've got a couple of friends of mine who are coaches these days. You know, one of them coaches at Georgia Tech. The other one coaches over in Asheville, North Carolina. They've coached one of the guys one guy coaches just finished in the top 10 in the NCAA national championship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're very successful coaches, but they don't run much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And why do they not run much anymore? Well, it's because at one time one of them ran 4 minutes for the mile and the other one was an Olympic trials marathon qualifier twice. Mm-hmm. You know, they were a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, winning your age group as a 50 plus year old person, it's not exciting when you've done those big things, right? And so they've dropped back to doing these other things.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, everybody goes through it.
Sure.
Even an Olympic trials marathon qualifier goes through it.
I mean, Michael Phelps has been very vocal about.
Good point.
When he retired, he went into a pretty deep state of depression.
Yep.
And I think it comes down to it's you. When this happens, it's because your identity is probably misplaced. The great thing about being a Christ follower is we have the real identity we can revert to. I shouldn't say revert to, because we shouldn't revert to it.
Yeah.
But we have it there.
Well, we know what you mean.
What I don't understand how people deal with is those that don't have that.
Yeah.
And that's where you see a lot of times people either spiral out of control or they jump to something else.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to put that. We talk about the God-sized hole that's in every one of our souls and spirits. They're trying to fill that God-sized hole with something other than God. And that's a cycle that I don't understand how people do it, because that would be exhausting.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what I say. It's great that we have that.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Isaiah 41:10 says, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Mm-hmm. Of course, this is where God's telling Israel that he's going to protect them. And he has, right? I mean, it's a miracle that Israel still exists today based on all the hostility that's around them. And we're not going to get into a political discussion about all that. But it really is a miracle when you think about it. And God tells us, basically, he wants to protect all of us, right? I think the problem is that God wants to put this hedge of protection around us to protect us. But what we want to do is we want to wander outside that hedge of protection, right?
Sure.
If we'd stay in that hedge of protection, we'll be protected at all the time. But we're, and you know, I think in Pam's case, it sounds like maybe she kind of wandered outside that hedge and now she's back inside that hedge.
Sure.
And kind of looking around for, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Right. So we got to be careful with that. Psalms 41 through 3, I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard me cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him. She says, this is why we share our testimonies and work to live a transparent and authentic life. Our stories of struggle and redemption are powerful tools in leading others to Christ.
Well said.
She gets it, doesn't she?
She does.
I mean, that's what we talk about every week. And I never thought about this. I never thought about how the Psalms are really David's testimony.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what they are. And that's a pretty cool thing to know. And think about this from a testimony standpoint. You may think, well, my testimony doesn't mean a whole lot, but here's God. All God, I mean, all David is doing in this case is he's just saying, here's how God blessed me.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I did, and this is how he rewarded me for what I did. And that's all he's doing. He's just recording his thoughts, mm-hmm. right? And here we are, thousands of years later, mm-hmm. sharing his testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that from a story standpoint. Your story may be something that's who knows who's gonna, it's going to touch. David never thought when he wrote down the Psalms that this is going to be something that two guys are going to be doing a podcast a few thousand years from now are
sure,
going to
yeah.
be reading, right? Yeah. But here we are.
Yeah. Stories are just so powerful.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Yep. And I'll tell you what, this story right here. Her story, this story, somebody out there is listening to this and they're thinking, that's me. This is me. I'm in that boat. I'm right there with you, Pam. Mm-hmm. And they're hearing this and I hope that they get.
And the chances are that person who's probably going to read this or listen to this is thinking they're the only ones that deal with this.
That's right.
And that makes it all that much more worse when you think you're the only one.
That's
you think you're some three-headed monster because you're dealing with this when, no, lots of people deal with this. But the devil don't want anybody to know that. They want to think you're unique, you're special, you're weird because you're dealing with this and you need to keep it to yourself and just deal with it. And that is not how to deal with things.
That's right. That's right. The way to deal with it.
Especially struggles in our life.
That's right. Pam's doing a great job here. 2 Corinthians 1, 3 and 4. Praise be to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. She says, God creates meaning out of our sufferings. If I allow God to be my comfort, he just might, in turn, use me to comfort others.
I mean, that's a mouthful there, but yeah, I mean, she hit it on the head. Can God use stories of, you know, the mountaintops? Yes, he can. Where do we most often get encouragement? It's from the stories of somebody coming through the valleys. Because that's where we need it. That's where we need that lifeline. That's where we need that encouragement and somebody to speak into us. And the best way to do that is to be able to hear from somebody that went through the exact same thing as you.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what she's doing here. I mean, how often do we hear the story of, you know, somebody who was in prison at one time, went through this horrible thing, mm-hmm. and they were able to overcome these bad circumstances. Well, the people who are currently in prison, they listen to that and they're like,
there's hope.
Yeah.
And the thing about Pam is I'm sure there was I'm sure for a period of time there was the thought in Pam's head, well, I don't need to share this. This is vanilla. This doesn't mean this is so superficial, and it's not.
That's
and
right.
I'm so proud that Pam shared this because this is something, and we've seen it a lot, but she's probably thinking, this is only me.
Yep.
Because you're right. Her wording in there doesn't sound like she acknowledges that a lot of people deal with this. Well, Pam, we're saying that a lot of people deal with this.
Yep.
You're not the only one.
That's right.
And it is, I don't want to say normal, but it is common.
Yeah. I would go so far as to say almost all of us have gone through something like this at some point in time, right?
And it's not just runners. Like I said, it's people who put their identity in all sorts of things. When that is gone, either for a period of time or forever, that's where identity crisis comes from. That's where the phrase, I assume that's where it comes from, is this very thing.
Yep. And a lot of people would just rather feel sorry for themselves. It's a perverse thing we have these days where people, they revel in feeling bad about themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible thing. And it's not something that's not from God.
No.
God does not want us to feel that way. And so we're all going to get to that point at some point, right? Mm-hmm. But how quick can we recognize it and then focus on God?
Put it aside.
And head in another direction. That's the question. Here's a question. Have you ever ignored a thorn in your side until it grew to a problem that other people started to notice?
Yes.
We've all been there. Again, this is a common story. I'm probably more guilty of not ignoring it, mm-hmm. but magnifying it, mm-hmm. which is just as bad, you know, making a big deal out of it. We've got to be careful with that. I remember I have done the ignoring thing. The thing that comes to my mind was 13 years ago, I was running and I had this pain in my leg and it would hurt. And then after about 2 miles, it would go away. Mm-hmm. So I just kept running on it for months. I went to the doctor and the doctor was like, you know, he didn't have a whole lot to say about it. And we did some tests and things and there was really nothing there. And then I ran this 10-mile race, and it got to the point by the time I got finished that I almost couldn't walk. It was so bad. And I finally decided, okay, I've got to get somewhere where they can figure out what's going on here. I had a stress fracture. I've been running on a broken leg.
That'll do it.
I probably prolonged my recovery by months mm-hmm. because I kept running on something that mm-hmm. was not good.
Pretty sure I've done that before, too.
Yes,
you have. The guy that was pulling me along.
Yeah.
It's all his fault.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But no, I mean, a lot of times that's not where my mind went when I read this. My mind went to, you know, you have that somebody upsets you and you don't deal with it right then. And then you just, and before you know it, by 7 days later, you have it in your head that this person not only intended to do it, but they're wanting to do it ongoing, and you create the worst circumstance in your mind, and God finally brings you to the point of, okay, you really have to go talk to this person, and you go talk to that person and they're like, no, that's not what I meant at all.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh. You torment yourself for days and weeks, and some people do this for years.
Yeah.
You know, the Hatfield McCoy type stuff.
Yep. It's true.
And the whole thing is a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
That's where my mind went when I read this, that thorn, you know, festers and festers and festers, and there, you know, there really wasn't a thorn at all.
Yeah.
It was just in your head.
Well, you brought up something between you and I the other day. You said, hey, I said something and you looked like you were upset about it, and I just wanted to make sure everything
we're
was good.
And you're like, and I don't even remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of times that's what happens, right? We get worried about something and there's really nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Another question. Is God disappointed in me when I'm sad? If not, why do we act like he is? Like pretending everything is okay, distancing ourselves from God until we pull ourselves together, avoiding time of fellowship with other believers. Interesting question. Is God disappointed with us? I don't know if that's the right word, disappointed. I think it depends on what we're sad about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're sad because we were following God's will and we missed out on something we should have missed out on, right. I don't think he's sad that we're and not. He may be disappointed in us then.
Sure.
You know, because he's like, no, you should
you
be happy.
You missed it.
You're missing what's going on. Yeah. But, I mean, when we put our trust in God and we're trying to do the right thing and, you know, life just smacks us upside the head, God's not disappointed with us. His heart hurts for us, I think. That's the way I look at it, don't you think?
Yes, it's an interesting thought. Does God get disappointed in us? And this is probably a deeper theological discussion that you and I are just wandering into really deep waters here that we have no place swimming. But I don't think of disappointment. When I think of God looking at me in a negative way, I don't think of disappointment. I think of I always pull it back to parent-child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things that I get disappointed in my kids at. I don't feel like God gets disappointed. I think there's times I get disappointed in my kids, and then there's times where they probably think I'm disappointed, but I'm looking at it as they're going to learn a lesson here.
Yeah.
I think that may be where, again, this is probably theological that I'm out of my realm here, but I look at it as God sees when we stumble as opportunities to learn something. He's going to learn something here. I don't know that disappointment's the right word.
Yeah.
I could be completely off base in saying that.
It's an interesting
this
thought.
This is off the cuff, right?
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the thought and the, like you said, neither one of us are qualified to discuss it. I do know this. I do know that what God wants is he wants for us to focus on him, and he wants us to put him first.
Right.
And I think that when we do that, then like you said, I think it's just God putting lessons in front of us to keep us streetlights, as we talk about, you know, to follow. And as long as we're doing that, I think he's pretty excited about what we're doing. But if we're sad along the way, it's an interesting thought as to what God thinks.
Give us some response on this. There's people listening to this that are a lot smarter in this area than we are.
So yeah.
Give us some feedback here.
Yeah, there you go. Last question. How can a believer best serve someone who is dealing with the blues?
One word. Listen.
Yeah.
We want to talk so much.
Yep.
And a lot of times we just need to listen.
Oh, I'm so bad about that.
Too. Me too.
Golly.
But I have little helpers in my life that remind me of this lesson that sometimes it's best just not to say anything and just listen. Because when I'm feeling blue, that's all I want to do is I want to vocalize it and I want to get it out and I call it talking it out.
Yeah.
You know. And Holly knows that, and she'll just sit there and listen until I finally get to the end and I say, "What do you think?" And then she speaks.
Yeah.
But she is so good about just listening. I'm so bad because Holly will be telling me something and I'm like jumping. Well, what about this? How about you do this? And that's not what we need to do.
Yeah, that's one thing that you and I are guilty of is as soon as somebody tells us something,
we gotta fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where our mind goes is okay, we're gonna fix this. Yeah. And sometimes they don't want you to fix it. They just want you to listen.
Yeah.
And to be sympathetic.
Yeah. I have a feeling you've empathetic. Had this same conversation
yes.
that I've had.
Yes. I'll tell you what, though. I've gotten better at listening. And you know what's made me better at listening?
Please tell me.
This podcast.
Really?
Yeah, because you know how we're going back and forth here. And you realize that people are listening. You don't want to talk over somebody.
Yeah.
So you have to wait until they finish.
Sure.
Right? And I think that has helped.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, listening, being there, just being there. Sometimes, you know, we've been there before where, you know, a lot of times you go to a funeral home and you don't really have to say anything. It's not about what you say. It's just the fact that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing I've always been fairly good at in my life is I show up. Mm-hmm. I'm there. I rarely miss things. I try to get to everything, and sometimes that's a bad thing. But I try to be there. Sure. I want kids to know. You know, with kids that are running, a lot of times I like to. You know, I've traveled a pretty good distance to go watch kids run because I just want them to know I care about them. And I think just being there a lot of times is a really big deal.
It is so hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Sports Run for God Run Club can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join the Run for God Run Club and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to runforgod.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. So have you ever heard of joggling?
I have. I didn't know there was an actual term for it.
Yeah, there's a term for it. It's called joggling.
Yeah.
Running and juggling at the same time. And there is a joggling world championship, and they've had that every year since the year 2008. I had no idea. Hmm. And if you're not a juggler, I'm a juggler. I can juggle. I'm not a professional juggler, but I can juggle fairly well with three balls. And juggling with an odd number of items versus juggling with an even number of items, completely different. It's a completely different thing.
Really?
Juggling with three, you think if you juggle with three or four, it's just add one. It's not the way it works. Hmm. You're doing two completely different things when you juggle with three versus four. When you juggle with three versus five, you do the same thing. A lot of people don't realize that.
Really?
But that's the way juggling works. So they have all these competitions, three through seven ball. And it's interesting because it's easier to juggle odd numbered balls. And the times for the odd number balls way faster than the times for the even number balls.
Really?
Yeah, because it requires a lot more concentration to juggle an even number ball.
So, okay, so you're about to get into the times here.
Yeah, yeah, it's really amazing. There are records from 60 meters to 50 miles, and they're
50
impressive.
Miles running while juggling?
Yes. Can you imagine that? The record, 4:35 for the mile for men. Think about it, 4:35, and then for women, it's 5:40. I thought, you know, a lot of times, a lot of these crazy, weird things, you know, men are really into, and women are like, we're not going to do that crazy stuff. Well, 5:40 for women, it's a pretty fast mile for women. So, for the marathon, 2:50 is a record. I mean, I can't even run a 2:50 marathon right now.
Yeah.
But there's no women's record in the marathon. No woman has ever tried it.
Gosh. There's a world record waiting to happen.
Just waiting. All you got to do is do it now.
And learn how to juggle.
Easy. Yeah, learn how to juggle. Juggling's easy. Juggling really
it's
is
not
easy.
Easy, Dean.
It is
I've
easy.
Tried it.
It is. The half marathon record is 1:20:40.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. So there's also a relay record. So as the way that I hear it is the way that it works is the baton is actually using one of the balls that you're juggling. You actually have to hand off to the next person. Mm-hmm. And those records are they're faster than you would think that they would be based on the fact that you're doing this. Now, the way that it works, my understanding is if you drop the balls, because you think, well, what happens if you drop it? You know, then is everything over? Well, what happens is you go back to the spot where you dropped it and you start back
again
from there.
Hmm.
So that's the way that it works. And then you also, there's a couple of rules. You get two steps before you start juggling. So, and then if you can't throw the ball way up in the air and then run under it and catch it. You know, that would, and I don't know that would make, I don't see how that would make it easier.
I would think the lower you keep it, the easier it's going to
be. Yeah, I would think so too.
Running, because I mean, you start to outrun it.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a rule. So I'm pretty fascinated by this. And again, like I said, I can juggle. So I think after I get through with this 100 miler, I may see how fast I can run a mile juggling.
So we should do you doing the juggling. You try to get the world record juggle running. What did you call it?
Joggling. Yeah.
And, you know, Lane's back to good shape. You know, we've talked about him doing the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
400.
Yeah.
Or is there a 400 or is there a Rubik's Cube mile? I don't know. We should really try to get a world record and stuff. I say we, like I'm helping contribute to this. Yeah. But
well, I can't do a world record because I can't even run fast enough to run just open.
Do the 800 then.
Well, it's a record that's faster than I can run. It's like 210.
So do the 7K. We can find a record that's not been broken, Dean.
Just got to be creative.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we're going to have the world record guy here anyway. I don't even know how all that works. How does all that work? Have you ever looked into it?
It's pretty extensive.
Lane's looked at it.
Yeah.
And he's pretty sure he could do the world record 400 while solving a Rubik's Cube.
It'd be fun to do. There's some things you have to do. I think you have to measure like the track. You have to make sure that everything's official and you have to have an official timing system. And there's things you have to do, but it's not overly cumbersome to do it, I wouldn't think. You have to film it, that kind of thing. So,
well, Kahala just got a new timing system for the track.
So we'll just, yeah.
That was a disaster.
Was it?
They decided to use it for the first time for the region track.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. There was at least two events, and both of them were sprints. The 100 and the 100 hurdles they had to call them back. They ran the whole thing, and they had to call them back to run it again because they didn't get anybody's time. I'm like, get the stopwatches out. You know, use them as backup. So, anyway.
Well, I don't think you can. You can't.
What do you mean?
You can't submit times to the state hand-timed. They have to be electronically timed.
Really?
Yes. I didn't know that. You can't qualify for sectionals unless they're electronically
timed. It was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I bet.
And the lady running it.
With all the track meets they have at Kahala, I wonder why they didn't try it before that.
Well, the lady running it said, I just haven't had time to use it and to figure it out. And they said, I have to use it this. And so
they committed to it.
You could tell she was so frustrated.
I bet.
And it's not, I mean, to her credit, she told them, look, I'm not where I need to be on this yet. So.
But at that point, well, I guess they could have found another timer possibly.
Yeah,
it's probably hard to find a timer this right now, though.
You know, I mean, timing is something you and I have talked about.
Yeah. You don't want to mess it up.
It's made sense for us to buy a timing system in the past.
Yep.
And that's kind of like being a, you know, I was a hobby photographer for a while, and people asked me to do their weddings, and I'm like, no.
That's
forever. We can't come back tomorrow and retake this if I mess up. It needs to be a photographer that does this every weekend.
Yeah.
And same thing with timing systems. Yeah. Well, I don't want to step into that. Anyway, you get somebody finishing a half marathon and it's their PR and you're like, sorry,
we missed it.
It didn't catch your time.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, I talk about a lot of runners on this podcast. Well, have you ever wondered, who's my all-time favorite runner? I'm about to tell you. This story is a little different. It's called Ode to My All-Time Favorite Runner. My all-time favorite runner is someone you probably wouldn't expect. Steve Prefontaine was a beast, and he ran fearlessly, but he's not my favorite. I think Jim Ryan may have been the best middle-distance runner of all time, but not even the master of the mile is my favorite, despite the mile being my favorite distance. I really love the grit and determination of Alberto Salazar. His willingness to give all he had in the duel in the sun is legendary, but it's not him. I could go back farther to Emil Zatopek and his unbelievable feat of winning the 5K, 10K, and marathon in the 1952 Olympics. Even Runner's World dubbed him the greatest distance runner of all time. But even his amazing record isn't enough for me to consider him my favorite. On the women's side, there is, in my opinion, no one who did more for the sport of women's running than Joan Benoit Samuelson. I have always absolutely loved all 5 feet, 2 inches of her, but she's not my favorite. Even the more recent exploits of Faith Kipyegon and her barrier-breaking sub-350 1500 meter doesn't put her at the top, not even with that beautiful wide smile. No. My favorite runner of all time is not a woman at all, nor is it a man. No, my favorite runner is a girl. Her name is Flojo, and she is a dog. She lived with us for nearly 13 years, and I have never enjoyed watching anyone run more than her. She would bound like a gazelle through our yard, just for the fun of it. She showed me what it looks like to run with pure joy. When it snowed, she would dive into the snow and come out the other side, just like she did as I raked leaves. I wanted to be mad at her for messing up my leaves, but watching her have so much fun was intoxicating. Sometimes, she would chase something, like a bird, but more often, she wasn't running after anything more than unbridled joy. When Flojo ran, she ran fast. She was built like a greyhound or a whippet, and she ran like it. She ran uphill often, but she really loved to run downhill where she could run even faster. I wish I had been able to clock her to know how fast she ran. The speed was part of the beauty. Not that running slow is not beautiful, but when you combine the grace of perfect running form with the intensity of going fast, it's magic. And oh, so fun to watch. If you've ever watched a cheetah run on National Geographic show, you know what I mean. Flojo was named after the famous American sprinter Florence Griffith Joyner, known as Flojo, after we adopted her as a puppy from an animal shelter in Chattanooga. It was not hard to come up with a name after we saw how fast she could run. Naming her after the world record holder in the 100-meter dash just seemed appropriate. And like her namesake, Flojo was as beautiful to look at as she was enjoyable to watch run. She was a mutt, but she was one of the prettiest mutts you'll ever see. Flo, as we called her, left this world recently, and I miss her terribly. We don't know what happens to our pets when they pass away, but I sure do like the idea of Flo bounding through endless fields in heaven, never to lose her breath and have to rest. I sure would like to see her again someday, but if not, I'm so thankful for the 13 years I had with her here on Earth. Run, Flo, and never stop.
Wow. What a great tribute, Dean. This is kind of different, but I know how much that dog meant to you.
She was something.
She was, and she's everything that you described here.
So much fun to just watch run. I wrote a story one time, a Dean's Thought story about running like a dog, because she just ran for the sake of running, and that's what we should do. We should enjoy it just to run. So yeah, I don't know why God puts pets in our lives.
Well, for those lessons, the simplicity of what you just said.
Yeah,
Flo ran for the pure joy of running. I mean, all of our pets do, you know. Louie is no Flo, but Louie, as much as he gets under my skin, we learn things from our pets.
Yeah.
And it's the simplicity of this life that we live. We often make it complicated.
Yeah. One of the most important things I think we learn from our pets is our pets are totally dependent on us.
Sure.
Totally. Right? Mm-hmm. Right?
It's a picture.
Yeah. It's a picture of who we are to God.
Yeah.
I mean, to say we're God's pets, I mean, may sound demeaning, but it's not really.
But we're totally dependent on Him. Whether we like to admit it or not,
that's
we are.
Right. That's right. Yep. And just like, could Flojo have run away and survived somewhere? Maybe. Probably not. Mm-hmm. She needed us, and we need God. And when we're little, as long as our parents are right there, we stayed out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's dangerous trouble or just doing something we shouldn't be doing, the closer we were to our parents, the better we were. Flo was that way too. Flo behaved herself while I was there, mm-hmm. but I catch her every once in a while looking out of the corner of her eye and trying to sneak across the street and go run to the neighbor's yard, but that's the same way we were. When we were kids, when we were under the influence of our friends, mm-hmm. we tended to get in trouble. When we were close to our parents, we tended to not get ourselves in trouble. And it's that way with God.
Yeah.
The closer we are to Him, the better we behave as humans,
yeah.
Right?
And the greatest thing about a dog, And I'm a cat guy too. I love cats, but they're so different. I mean, I'm thinking about Louie, who, you know, when we have our meetings, we have to kick him out because he snores so loud. But the thing about a dog, you can just scold them for doing whatever it is they're doing, and you can leave for 10 minutes and come back, and that tail's wagging.
Yep.
And they're happy to see you. Now, cats, on the other hand.
Yeah, they're a little different.
Bullseye outside. I've always said if Bullseye was 40 pounds, he would kill every one of us. Because they're just evil and mean and just love to rip the heads off things and bring it to the front porch and lay it there. So
you know there's some truth in that. This is morbid, but you know that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm not kidding when I say that.
Yeah.
Bullseye would. I can tell by the way he looks at us sometimes. Mm. It's like, I would kill you if I were bigger.
There are cases where people have died and they had a bunch of cats in their house and nobody knew they had died. Dogs don't do that. Dogs will just sit right there waiting for you to wake up. Yeah, they will. Yeah. Anyway, you're right. All Flo wanted to do was she just wanted to please Debbie and I. Yeah. That's what she lived for. That's what she wanted to do. And that's who we're supposed to be to God.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What a sermon.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share running and walking tips each day, as well as encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
All right, so we're back. So I want you to repeat what you just said, Dean. How old are you again?
58.
And tell everybody what you just said to me off camera.
I said that kickball and 100-mile training doesn't go together. I was playing kickball with some kids yesterday.
You said, I played kickball yesterday. That was a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Oh, my goodness. Well, every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. And here's this week's. There's new barriers all the time, right? I was just talking about this joggling thing. You know, it's something new to try. Mm-hmm. And I love to try new things. You know, running a new PR is not in my, it's not really in my repertoire anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I've run pretty much every race distance, and I'm not as fast as I once was, so I'm probably not going to set any PRs. But
there's always those new age groups.
There's new age groups. That's right.
What you were going to say here.
And if there aren't new age groups, there's something else, sure, right?
Yeah.
It's I'm running a 100-miler. I've never done that before. Yeah. I can do that. You know,
I mean, runners are the only people excited to get older.
That's right. That's right. Yep. It's good stuff. What did you see? Mark Zuckerberg ran a 5K this past weekend. He ran 21:02.
I didn't.
He ran 20:58 according to something. Somebody said it was 20:58. I saw on his watch it said 21:02. I'm not sure which one's the official time. But he had ACL surgery only 5 months ago.
Really?
And he ran 21:02. It's pretty cool to see the celebrity doing that. Now, a year ago, he ran 19:34 before the ACL surgery. So,
how old is he? I
guess pretty
he's,
good.
He's in his 30s?
41, I want to
really?
Say.
Okay.
I think that's right.
I think
right.
He was in his 30s.
I want to say that. It's pretty good. He's got to be a busy guy, right? This is proof that when you say you're too busy, if Mark Zuckerberg can find time to run, you would think just about anybody could, right? You would think. So I wondered, who's the fastest celebrity of all time? So, of course, the word celebrity is debatable, right? I mean, what constitutes celebrity? I don't know. But I found this list in Wikipedia. So if you want to go to Wikipedia and look this up, it's a very interesting list. The fastest on there was a guy by the name of Bernard Heinrich, who wrote a book about running. And he ran a 2:22 in 1980. He's also a biologist. The book that he wrote is about running and biology and how and why we run, I think it's called. Pretty cool. Oz Perlman, who's a magician, ran 2:23 in 2014.
These are marathon times.
These are marathon times, yeah. Daniel Atienza, he's a cyclist, ran 2:29 in 2013. In 2013, rather. David Petraeus. Mm. back in 1982, ran a 250 marathon.
Wow.
Thought that was cool. Alan Turing, you know, he's kind of the forerunner of the computer.
Yeah.
Alan Turing is huge as far as the development of computers. And he ran 246 way back in 1947, when 246 was crazy fast, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody commented that he could have made the Olympic team. Now, I don't know about the Olympic team, but it's pretty good. Jamie McMurray, a NASCAR driver, ran 253 a few years ago. Dana Carvey, the comedian, ran 304. Clarence Thomas. I would never guess Clarence Thomas was a marathoner at any point in time. But way back in 1980, he ran a 311.
Wow.
So not only is he the best Supreme Court justice, but he's also the fastest.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then Harry Reid also, got to get the other side of the aisle. He ran a 316 back in 1972 at the Boston Marathon.
Wow.
So I just thought those were some cool things.
Yeah, that's right. Those are cool facts.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other celebrities that have run marathons too. You know, famously, Oprah ran the marathon and so many others. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Now, I'm not a celebrity watcher. So I went through that list on Wikipedia and I didn't recognize half the names.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not into celebrity at all. But you may go in there. You may look up that list. You may be more amazed at it than I am. So check that out. Our trivia question for this week. Okay, so we've never done this before, okay? But I'm going to ask a question to see if you've been listening. All right? So here's the question. What is the world record for running a mile while juggling? And if you are the first to answer that question, we've already given it to you. If you know the answer to that question, send it to dean@runforgod.com. Be the first Run Club member to answer that question correctly, and you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. Very cool. And I'll leave you with this motivational thought of the week. It comes from Albert Einstein. It really doesn't have anything to do with running, but we've been talking about this a couple of times in the recent past, and so Debbie kind of brought it up, and I like it. Albert Einstein said, "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." Wow. That's pretty good, isn't it?
It is.
Science confirms Christianity. And don't let anybody tell you any differently. A lot of times we have people arguing, is it science or is it Christian? Or, you know, they're not mutually exclusive.
Sure.
So keep that in mind. All right. All right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.